ensure that the contracts that arise out of the use of state forests, they do not forget that it is for the people and for the benefit of the people and not only for the privately owned sector to benefit. So, Chairperson, the question, as you look at all the challenges and as you look at the defense, as you look at the response that was presented by the department, one has to ask, in terms of legislation, so where are the bottlenecks? Where are the problems arising? And what we could find, Chairperson, is that there seems to be a problem or a challenge on implementing the provisions as they exist on the bill. I mean, as they exist on the principal act. For an example, Section 23 lists the activities that the minister may provide or issue a license for within a state forest or other forest, as we may know them. These include permitting the grazing or herding of animals, cultivating the land, management of plantations, felling or cutting of trees, and the list continues, Chairperson. But these are some of the concerns that the communities were raising to say, but we are now prohibited. We cannot access state forests. And the question that arises is then, who is prohibiting them? And if people are denied access into the forest to do the activities that they've known, the activities that have given them life, who is prohibiting them? And perhaps as one was trying to understand, you then look, perhaps the prohibition arises out of the agreements that are now in place in the areas where they are issued. Then we said, let's look at the types of agreements that the Act is enabling. In terms of Section 26, the Act is enabling the continuation of the servitude. In terms of Section 27, the Act is enabling these agreements. In terms of Section 27A, there is a trust agreement that must be done in terms of that Act as well as Ingonyama Trust Act. There are sale agreements. There are community forestry agreements that, if you read Section 29 to 32, it covers the concerns and provides mechanisms that should be followed. And one of the other problems was that whatever activity that takes place, perhaps maybe aligning it with the mining issue, as this bill seeks to prohibit any mining without the processes they outlined. One questions the fact that if such engagements are taking place, are the people then not consulted? Are the people not given an ear to make their views and to provide considerations that will be taken forward for their benefit as well as the benefit of the whole country and the economy in such a specific area? For an example, in the Ingonyama Trust Act, there is a statutory provision that says that the public must be consulted and must provide consent. So in these instances and the challenges that we received from the public, one seeks to question, is the legislation then being implemented properly and are the enforcement mechanisms in place or not? As well as the same issue when you speak to community forestry and how Section 32 is saying communities must be held. This was an issue that spoke to the issue about water licenses and the 300 and whatever days or months it takes for people to get such licenses. It is issues, Chairperson, that the provisions of the Act are actually speaking to. But I believe that the challenge, if one were to space it out, it lies in the cooperation amongst the departments, especially where the mandates are overlapping. Because what was the main concern was the fact that in the response that the department presented, most of the answers were basically saying, we've written a letter to communicate with so-and-so department, with so-and-so minister. But if you look at the provisions of the Act, there was no answer to say that in terms of Section 44 for argument's sake or whatever section that is in the Act. This is what the department has put in place. That is what the department has done. And thus, since then, the amendments that are before the committee, though they may be necessary or for other questions or challenges that they've picked up as the department, and to align with the existing policy and the direction which the whole government wants to take, there still remains why all the time make an issue as if there's a vacuum in legislation when the question is not there. Legislation seems to be sufficient, but what are we doing about implementing legislation? Chairperson, there was a judgment from, again, the chief, written by the Justice Judge President of KZN, the matter of Khadebe and Ingonyama Trust as well. That judgment, Chairperson, it actually provides a good example of the challenges that these communities raised here. And it also shows that the provisions of the Act that are relevant, they have the answers, they have the solutions. And we need to ensure that we must do proper implementation, and Parliament needs to do proper oversight in instances like this, Chairperson, where we see that we may continue to draft laws that will stay in the statute book, but if they are not implemented as enacted, then the problem does not lie in the legislation or the lack of legislation thereof, but it lies in the interpretation or the implementation processes and the enforcement mechanisms that we put in place. The drafting issues, Chairperson, as it appears on that last page, we will deal with, I'm sure, once we've dealt with the content, but I just noted it so that we are aware that, for an example, in Section 7, in the amendment of Section 7, there is a technical correction that we need to do there, Chairperson, just to make sure that the provision reads well and it is understood in the context of the Act, Chairperson. Moving further, Chairperson, with the challenges that were raised, like I've said, the communities indicated how they are suffering because of the existing agreements that are in place. And as I said, if we look at both the Act and if we look at the empowerment of the Constitution as well as the rule of law and what is required of the executive. Section 85(2) of the Constitution, number one, it enjoins the executive as members of the cabinet to implement national legislation, except where the Constitution or legislation provides otherwise. In terms of Section 85(2)(e), the executive authority must also perform any executive function provided either in the Constitution or national legislation. So as already pointed out, Chairperson, these are the provisions that the department needs to ensure that there is compliance. We are saying that the legislation is in place, but how is that legislation being implemented? And like I posed the question, where are the bottlenecks? Because clearly they are not on the vacuum of lacking legislation. Section 24 of the Act, Chairperson, provides licensing provisions which enable the setting up of a period or timeframes, the timeframes of which the agreement must run for. And it also enables that when there are contracts or agreements that are put in place for purposes of this Act, the terms of that contract, the minister has a say on them, and those terms, they must ensure legality and ensure the protection of the people. So like I said, Chairperson, mainly if you look at the Act and the provisions of the PAJA Act, the Promotion of Administrative Justice, those are the statutes that are already in place to assist the administration of the challenges that have been placed in this, or that have been raised in this instance, Chairperson. Section 27A of the Act, of the Principal Act, it also empowers the establishment of a trust in respect of state forest or land held in trust by the KZN Ingonyama Trust. And where there is a claim for land restitution and a right of restitution, where such claims are still being processed and they are not finalized, but the minister is empowered in that regard to play a role. The minister is further empowered to direct how the trust monies are to be used. So on the concerns that were raised, as the people said, we do not benefit anything. And the response by the department in other instances, as I've already pointed out, were problematic in light of the legislative obligations as well as the obligations as I've read out in terms of the Constitution. Section 41 establishes the National Forest Recreation and Access Trust. There were mention of other trusts as well. Like I said, when I started, there are different types of agreements that can be in place, which when the department presented, it made reference to the committee, to the other existing trusts, like your Kabelo Trust, as well as other trusts. There's Section 44, Chairperson, in the Act, which requires that there be reports that come to Parliament. I couldn't ascertain with certainty, Chairperson, whether that section is actually followed and whether we are receiving the report and whether what we have dealt with or what kind of information we have received. Now the question is, and these sections, Chairperson, in terms of the bill that's before the committee, they are not being amended, which means the department is also of the view that they are in order, they are practical, and they are there for good purposes, and maybe they are assisting and some good measure is coming out of it. The question that rises and that was also lacking from, I think the department also admitted to it, and they indicated that there are some enforcement mechanisms that they are still deliberating on to put on place. So the question still remains, what are the enforcement mechanisms that are in place to address the concerns? And if we look at this is a 1998 Act. Since 1998, those mechanisms have not been in place, or what is happening? There's been amendments to the Act that happened as well. How has that helped the department and look into the concerns that were raised? And from the report that came from the support staff, there was an issue of definitions that were raised. To say maybe some definitions like plantation and decision and definitions of forest, there is something that's missing, because one would understand that a plantation can never be managed or maintained the same way as a forest, because the other is natural and the other is at the hands of us as humans. So, Chairperson, many of the issues were raised, and like I said, there are only three definitions that this bill seeks to amend, but the department, for an example, in the definition for natural forest, they wanted to bring about the indigenous vegetation as well as its protection. When you look at the definition of national forest as it stands, does it not cover that? Is it not already included as whatever else that comes out of that forest, if it's an indigenous forest? And therefore, if you read through the interpretation principles, is that not covered? The question then becomes, what was the mischief that prompted the proposed definitions that needs to be corrected? And how are we supposed to treat them differently for purposes of the Act, which is to promote and ensure that the sustainable management, what is outstanding from the existing definitions as they appear. Section 1 of the Act provides most of the definitions, and if you read them in context with the Act, I'm still not sure, Chairperson, for the proposed definitions that we are doing, but as we go on, we will be assisted with more information. Chairperson, without now going, without going into the specific complaints as we already know them, we've also checked the other existing laws, like your environmental laws, as the chairperson had pointed in the previous meeting, and the discussions were taking place. How are we finding congruence with the other acts? How are we ensuring that where the mandates are overlapping, we are finding cooperation amongst the departments? There is a number of existing legislation, Chairperson, like I mentioned in the slide up there. Environmental laws, the National Forest Act and Conservation of Agricultural Resources Act, the Felt Fires Act, and many other laws within the agricultural portfolio and rural development laws. Are all those laws not of assistance in taking forward the issues that the communities has raised? And this brings us back, Chairperson, to the function or the purpose that the two councils, the one that is established in terms of the Act and the Charter Council, what they are expected to do and how, and the investigations that they conduct, as well as the advice that they provide to the minister. Some of these issues, are they coming to the attention of the minister? Are the two councils doing the transformation as expected or as in terms of the charter terms as they indicated, or it is just statutory entities that are there on paper but not really helping much? Because those are the questions that we should be asking, Chairperson. Therefore, as we look, the actions other than what the department indicated, combined ministerial efforts must be brought to the attention of Parliament with an explanation as to how the laws are not assisting where they should be assisting, and what are the bottlenecks and what are the impracticalities that are stifling the process in moving forward, just like the panel discussion report has recently done. But I think this portfolio on agriculture and such issues needs to conduct a similar exercise, Chairperson, just to guide Parliament as well as provide the assessment as to whether, with the legislation we have in place, are we not going anywhere? Because this is what the response the department brought to the committee left them feeling and thinking, that does it seem like legislation in the agriculture portfolio is useless, is not helpful? Because if it cannot provide an answer to the questions or the concerns that the communities raised, then what statutes do we have there and what are they for? Those are the questions, but clearly, especially if you just engage on the exercise on this one, the National Forest Act, the provisions are very sufficient. And if you look at the Constitution again, if there is conflict in either the ordinances, because this is a Schedule 4 subject matter, which means the provinces can also legislate on it. If there is a conflict between national legislation as well as provincial legislation, there are mechanisms that the Constitution has provided as to how we deal with it. There are also mechanisms that come out of the Act itself. So we are not really sure where the problem lies, and hence the proposal that there is a proposal in the bill to say they want to amend Section 47, which deals with the assignment of powers. If you look at Section 99, which then in the constitution that says from a national perspective, the minister or whoever wants to assign in the other sphere of government, that can be done. The bill wants to address that, but where is the problem? Where is the assignment not happening properly? What are the issues that are coming up? There is nothing wrong with the amendment that is proposed for Section 47 because it aligns with what the Constitution indicates. But when the department in our engagement also sent their input, they indicated something to say perhaps that provision must come out or it's not necessary anymore. These are some of the issues that are really conflating the problem and seemingly make as though there is a problem when there is no problem. So, Chairperson, again, we know there were issues raised in terms of traditional leaders and the traditional authorities from the communities and how the communities are not taken care of. I think the legislation that is in place, and as we know that there is also some bills that are seeking to address the issues on traditional authorities and those that are already in place, and the judgments of the courts which have helped us to interpret some of the provisions that are already in the statute books. For an example, the same judgment that I made reference to, the courts and the law is tried into indicating that a land that is administered by a trust is still held on behalf of the state for the benefit of the people in the communities where they are, and in the communities where the trust resources must be administered. So the people that live in those communities, they have a right to benefit from the natural source or the natural resources as they know them and as they see them. That is what the law says, and that is what the interpretation of that law is actually saying. Again, Chairperson, the land, like your natural forest, is inviolable and it's also inheritable, which means even if there may be trustees, sole trustees that are holding the land on behalf, it is exactly that. The land is held on behalf of the people, so people must still benefit. So the traditional structures in place, they are there to make sure that they promote access to that land and the use of that land. And therefore, I think the issues that were raised about traditional authorities, it may either be on the lack of information or lack of understanding what is available and how to use it. Like I said, for an example, Section 2, Subsection 4, and Section 2, Subsection 8 of Ingonyama Trust is very directive, and it's a provision in just one province, which enables people to be actively involved and for people to influence the decisions going forward, especially where it impacts on their daily living and their well-being. I think, Chairperson, like I said, I will provide this judgment, the judgment about the case on Khadebe versus Ingonyama Trust, because it's a good example. I will provide it to the committee just to see some of the challenges that the communities presented and how the existing legislation is in fact there to assist us to deal. And this was a good example to deal with the issues in terms of accessing forestries as well as seeing what is there on the statute and how it can be utilized. So I will jump through those slides because they speak to issues that I've already spoken to Chairperson. The three slides that also speak on the legislation that is in place and the apartheid legislation, which some of which is being taken out of the statute books, but some of which is still used. And to round off, Chairperson, from I think it is clear that the problem does not lie on the Act, but there are challenges that are still wide and requires a structural comprehensive solution and not piecemeal suggestions of small amendments as done in this instance, Chairperson. So what is the way forward, Chairperson, looking at what I've said and looking at what is in the statute book? First of all, Chairperson, I think we've all picked up that there are shortcomings in the interpretation or perhaps the response of the department was not clearly understanding the terms of reference and the terms of what exactly was needed of them, so that it shows to the committee that the problem is actually not with the amendments, and the problem does not then require that the amendments go through, but perhaps it was on understanding what was the instruction and what was the response that would have taken the committee forward, because I'm sure this information is probably lying somewhere with the department or the councils to say, this is what is happening, this is what we are doing, and this is how people are being assisted. Another thing that was picked up was the lack of cooperation and communication amongst the departments, because Chairperson, to provide the response that says, out of the public hearings, a letter has been written to the Minister of Water Affairs, but without telling the committee what else is in place, what else has happened to address the water licensing issues. So that's where the problem lies. And in conclusion, Chairperson, I think from providing a way forward, we need to appreciate that this legislation is very firm, and it is tried in terms of directing what must happen, what is the action that is required. And from the complaints that were raised and from what the department has also accepted, enforcement mechanisms are what needs to be put in place. I think it is crucial to ensure that oversight mechanisms and the oversight that the Constitution is putting as an obligation over Parliament must take place. Therefore, Chairperson, I think in order to assist the people and for people to understand and follow what Section 32 is basically enjoining the department to do, there is still a need for the drive to train the people and teach them on what is available and how to use it. Perhaps a political engagement is necessary on how the state resources are genuinely benefiting the citizens, and if the information presents a different view or is aligned with what the communities have already raised as their challenges. That can come up perhaps in a dialogue, and maybe some more information that the department will provide as an indication to what is really in place in response to what were the challenges that were raised. So from what we have seen, the statute is sufficient. The legislation covers a direction into the problems that have been raised. But perhaps there's a problem with the implementation as well as the proper interpretation to put that into good use, Chairperson. Chairperson, I also made a summary on the bill itself, or concerns that were raised on the provisions of the bill, but I've also spoken to them as I was speaking through the presentation. And as we deliberate through and when we are given the instruction to go ahead, and if the bill is deliberated to its end, those are some of the amendments then that will come into the A list to try and talk to the issues that perhaps we feel the committee must take into account and make a decision on. that basically speaks to clause 3 of the bill. Like I said, in clause 3, which is dealing with section 7, there's definitely going to be an amendment that corrects the technical understanding of that, as well as the provision that deals with the appeal processes. But I think on the public trusteeship, maybe the department can provide more that we possibly are not aware of. Thank you, Chairperson. That brings me to the end of my presentation.
Thank you very much for the good work that has gone into through this process. We welcome the your presentation. Honorable members, that was the presentation. You are welcome to interact with the presentation on need more clarity. Honorable Jaisa, Honorable Madela, Honorable Mwabe, and Honorable Maluni. Honorable Jaisa?
Perhaps the legal issues will be not easy to understand. When you have been saying there's nothing wrong with the legislation, and perhaps does she suggest perhaps that there was no need perhaps for the amendment, or perhaps the legislation could, as it is being amended, because she's saying now that it's only the implementation that has not been happening. So I'm confused then, quite the difference on the first place now. Try to amend if the legislation is good. I just want to get clarity between legislation being good and the amendment, you know, that you are making to the act. So that hence we have voted this bill for now. So if I can just get carried on that, it would be very good. Well, I'm getting lost now. Good, but being amended and so on. So what is it that I'm talking about?
Honorable Madela.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you very much for excellent presentation. Yes, Chair, listening to the presentation, the question indeed as posed just now is whether the amendment is a necessitated one. Is it very really necessary for the amendment? Moreover, I think one thing that comes out very, very clearly is the implementation, the administration of the current act that leaves much to be desired by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries Chairperson. Even the issues of trust, the original bill indeed vested a trusteeship in the minister, and indeed also task the minister to present a report 3 months after the financial year. Chair, I know I'm not a year in this portfolio committee, but I have not come across such a report being presented at this portfolio committee. Chair, it may have been in just before I joined this portfolio committee. But again, key, Chair, the administration of that responsibility indeed is the responsibility of the department. And, Chair, there are definitions that was not in the original act, the whole issue of woodlands, and though I must confess I'm a bit confused with regard to defining woodlands as a group of indigenous trees which are not a natural forest but whose crowns cover something. Chair, I'm a bit convention, but one certainly would not object against that, the inclusion of such a definition. But for us, in the public hearing that one has been part of, Jay, the whole issue here was indeed the conditions under which our people live in those forests, under which they work in those forest areas, Jay. And clearly, the amendment does not address that, nor does the original act address those kinds of concerns, Chairperson. Let me stop there. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Greetings to honourable members and the members of the department. Thanks so much, Sister, for the presentation. But I just seek one clarity. You try to explain the issue of the powers of the minister vis-a-vis the Ngonyama Trust. But on page 2, when you speak of section 21 and 41, that say minister is the sole trustee and may take steps to promote a voluntary grant of access to forests, both state-owned and privately owned. Now, my question is, or the clarity that I seek is that privately owned include those forests that can be found under the Ngonyama Trust? Because one wants to get, you know, in case there is a serious issue about the Ngonyama Trust, the land these days. And as MPs, that's a question we find in our constituencies, to say, you guys are taking now the land of the king and all those stories. I just need that clarity as to, does the powers of the minister applies to forests within that boundary of the trust? Thanks, Chair. Otherwise, I'm clear on other issues.
No, Chair, I think we agree with you that the team from Parliament have done an excellent work. And I suppose that they were responding to issues that were raised by communities and to establish as to whether the Principal Act does address those issues. And from where I'm sitting and from the presentation, it suggests that most of those issues are being attended to. The only problem we experienced is that the officials of the department were unable to explain fully to communities, including the portfolio committee, as to what is contained in the Principal Act and so on and so forth. But then Bumi says the problem with the major problem is with implementation and enforcement. And I want to underline those two. It's implementation and enforcement. Now, the question I want to pose is, because I suppose that most of these things must be covered in the regulations. Are you suggesting that even on the regulations do not deal with enforcement in particular, including implementation? And if they cover those, then I will agree with that it then comes back to us as a portfolio committee to do our oversight work and to use a term to whip and so on. But, I thought that the department will also comment a little bit on this thing, but I suppose they are not on the agenda. But you will recall, Chair, from where, when we were going to different areas, interacting with people and so on and so forth, as we were sitting in front, all of us at all material times, we are not happy with the responses from the department, from the department. So I think this will be an advice to the department. When we go to deal with a specific legislation or a specific matter, if it's fisheries, if it's forestry, if it's agriculture, and so on, let's get people who understand fully as to what is happening in that field, in order for them to be able to explain fully to members of parliament and to members of the public. It will make work easy for everybody and so on, instead of us going to and fro. Now, the other thing, Bumi, which you spoke about, you said there are only two things which you think are major, which would need to be attended to. One of those is the definitions, which must be explained properly and so on. I suppose, Chair, maybe when we deal with the bill, if we decide to do so, they will go into town on that aspect. She's also saying, and I wanted to confirm that aspect, that the major amendment on this thing is on the, and I'm now using my term, the preservation of forest land. That's the major thing, and nothing else. Is that my understanding? Is that what you are saying? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Louis. You know, the thing that Mbumi is raising, agreeing with honorable members that it says that we should do our work more and which the department should, we should actually use the application in the statute to deal with problems that are facing by this government. I want to touch on the issue of the sole responsibility of the minister. If you remember, even the report on the panel that was led by the former president, Halima Mutlanti, on land, it keeps saying that minister of land affairs is the custodian of the land in the country. To start there. And everybody who holds land somewhere does that on behalf of the minister, because the minister holds that land in custody of the people. So, and this is one of the things that has not been dealt with as parliament, which they expect a panel is singling out, that government has not done its part in terms of holding this land in custody of the people and make sure that it does benefit. It does develop the people. So that's one of the things that I fully, because you know when you deal with the Ngonyama Trust, you go in every meeting, you get even, you know, people must not speak about it, people must have a fear. It's like it's something no seated somewhere which can actually bite anybody who raises. Even including, and the worrying fact has been that, even including those ministers who are responsible. You know, when they talk about, I think as we deal with this legislation, of course, we'll have to take reference to what the panel had said about our legislation. And that's why we said as a committee, this should be our starting point to make sure that the legislation that will pass must address issues and concerns of the community. My only question is on the, which maybe it might even come when we deliberate, that one of the things that we get on the ground was the continuation of the contrary messages that we found in government, where the Minister of Water Affairs will say, water is a scarce resource in this country, but you still have Department of Agriculture through forest allowing companies who are making money to plant trees that consume a lot of water in the country. So it's something that we have to deal with, and it must not get lost, Mpumi. I'm not sure whether it will come when we deliberate and whether it will be even part of the definition. This woodland thing, as we define it, we should actually be specific what we refer to, just to give it as a woodland, because this thing of trees that consume a lot of water and those that have lot made money out of it, they don't even they become a problem when there is a crisis, when there is drought. People cry to their government. You'll never see them giving a hand to say, we are the consumer of water, therefore we have to do much more and join government. So, Mpumi, you want to respond? Or let me give a contact address. I want to say something on these issues because you, before Mpumi comes in, or can start responding, assisting Mpumi because you're part of the team.
No, sir, I think Mpumi has covered everything as is discussed.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to all the members for the questions. I will try and answer them, but I think the answer will be capturing a response to almost all the answers, all the questions as somewhere related. I think the first one to address, Chairperson, is whether there is a need for the amendment bill. I believe there is, Chairperson, because the department would not have gone through such an exercise without having picked up why we need to deal with this. Also, if one looks at the, because they also provided me with the social impact assessment report from the relevant department, though that report is not so much helpful, and I think I also need to share it with the committee so that they look at it themselves. There is a need for technical amendments that the bill deals with. And I think for some of the things that were not addressed, like that issue of prohibiting the prospecting and the mining activities in forest land. So there's definitely a need for the bill in light of this, in light of what I've just provided and the content and substance of the bill itself. But in terms, I think what we need to appreciate is the fact that our responses and the task that we had to do, it was solely revolving around the issues that were raised by the communities. So one had to go back to the Principal Act and understand the Principal Act and see what the Principal Act framework is, whether there are vacuums in there or whether there's some mischief that the communities have indicated, but it is not addressed. So the unfortunate part is that the bill that we are dealing with is not a standalone bill, as members understand, but it is a bill that amends an existing act. Therefore, you can't take it out of that principal act and make it a standalone. So there may be a need for this amendment, but the problem was maybe exacerbated by the fact that the answers that should have spoken to the challenges that the communities raised were not spoken to as though there is nothing in the statute, whereas the provisions that are in the statute could in some way or should be able to address the issues that were raised. So I can't make that assessment or judgment to say then there is a need or no need to go ahead with this, but definitely if you look at the content, there is benefit in light of what the bill wants to achieve outside the broader challenges that the communities raised. The Act provisions, they do address, they do provide a framework, because that's what all of legislation does. it provides a framework and an enabling environment for certain actions to take place. So to the question whether does then the Act address the conditions of the people, in my assessment I would say yes, the framework that is there in the statute book, it is enabling. They are enabling provisions that permit certain actions that must take place for the benefit of the people and ensuring that there is order in the country and ensuring that there is structure for things to be done in a proper way. The other question was on the issue of the powers of the minister versus what the Ingonyama Trust empowerment is. I think to answer that, the answer lies in the Ingonyama Trust Act itself. Just as a direct answer, if we look at Section 3.3 of that Act, it says transfer of land to Ingonyama in trust. It says all land and real rights referred to in Subsection 1 shall be transferred to the Ingonyama as trustee of the Ingonyama Trust referred to in Section 2.1 for and on behalf of the members of the said tribes and communities and the said residents without payment of transfer duty, stamp duty, or any other fee or charge, but subject to any existing right or obligation on or over such land and subject also to the provisions of this Act. I think, like I said, we need to appreciate the fact that trust land is held in custody. However, it always remains the state land. So even if it may be held in custody by the Ingonyama Trust and the Ingonyama being the sole trustee of that trust, being assisted by the board to administer the benefits and the activities of the trust, that is the main point or departure point. It is held in custody, and they have the power to administer it as they see fit. However, as the courts have indicated, because it is and was recorded as state land, for any other purposes, maybe for an example, if there has to be land transformation programs that must take place, if the state has taken a decision that transformation needs to take place in such a way, that transformation of national land will also impact on the trust land that has been held in trust by the trustees or in custodian for the people. I'm hoping that would suffice as an answer, and it does respond to the question. And the other question was whether the regulations do not deal with some of the issues that are raised or are sought to be corrected through the amendments. I did not get time to go through the regulations in that have been enacted in terms of this Act. So the answer I would have would not really be a fair and informative answer. But looking at the impact assessment part, there is a portion where that report indicates that there will be a need for amendments or review to the existing regulations of this Act. And I'm not sure, because there are no details in terms of that, I'm not sure what it is they were talking about in terms of that report, the socioeconomic assessment report that is done by DPE, I think. And the question that relates to two major things that I mentioned, one of which being the definitions and the preservation of forest land and what the Act and the bill seeks to do. Like I said, and I think maybe my colleague can come into that and provide more details. But definitely on the definitions, and as the question have been raised, we need to look deeper and deal with practical issues rather than be theoretical. And so those are definitely some of the amendments that we need to look into as the deliberations and the instructions of the committee are given to us when we must provide the end result or the outcome of this exercise. Chairperson, on your question, I think it's a task that you've given to all of us as well as all the departments to deal with that issue as to with each mandate that each portfolio has, how are we looking into issues like that, that you can't continue to plan something that in the future is going to create problems for us. We need to have foresight, and that's the whole point of sustainable management of forests and the resources that we have. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Any follow-up, Honorable Mwabe? You wanted to...
No, it's not a follow-up, Chair, but to confirm that I'm clarified, I'm covered. Thanks.
It is also not a follow-up, Chair, just to make one last comment on this aspect. Now, Chair, you will agree with me that most of the issues that were raised by communities, they centered around the conditions of employment, human rights issues, and so on. And previously, we did assign the department with the responsibility to attend to these matters, working together with other departments. I hope that next time we'll have an opportunity to get a feedback from the department as to whether have they attended to those issues of conditions of employment, human rights issues, and so on and so forth. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think indeed, Honorable Maloyi, in our next, as we come back, we'll have a session. You remember as we chased the department away, we said that they should actually table those issues to the council, and the council must go and investigate and come up with the answer, which will include the program to deal with those issues. So in the next, I think in our program, in the next we'll have to deal with that. But suffice to say that we are clear that issues that are raised by communities, it was the responsibility of the department to deal with those issues, and which they've actually neglected their duty. Honorable Maloyi used to say, you are sleeping in duty. Actually, the department is slipping in duties because there is no any legislation that stops them from intervening and deal with the problem as they arise in the community. Therefore, there is no need for the communities to be serviced, Honorable Maloyi, when the committee goes for oversight. Department is on daily basis working to service the people. And one of the things that is raised in that report of the panel is to say it's actually asking members of parliament questions, that the powers of the parliament in terms of the constitution, if you have this department which is given the responsibility to be the custodian of our people, act on behalf of the people, and make sure that they manage resources to develop the same people. They are not doing that. What mechanism should Parliament have? Or and mechanisms are there in the Constitution. That's why there is accountability. That's why there is oversight. But how we have been dealing with this mechanism, including them, the department, as they interact with companies, ourselves interacting with the department, because you could see that the department, minister in particular, you know, the act gives ministers power because it's the only elected person representing those people to take charge of the, or to hold custody of their resources and distribute them properly to those people. So it's something that we have to look at, and we'll have to wait for the interaction with the department and with the minister. And that time, I think you must communicate with liaison officer and the parliamentary officer, that in that meeting we'll need the minister with the council and the deputy minister. They must be here when we're going to deal with those issues. We still need answers, because we have not been answered by the department for those issues that have been raised by the communities. So there is legislation. Now we have been helped as members. Legislation is sufficient for them to tackle those problems of the communities. So I think it should remain like that. We still need answers. And Honorable Papa.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Just briefly, somehow following up on what Comrade Maloyi is saying, because it was always a serious issue of things that were raised by the communities. What I wanted to propose, suggest, maybe that the department, if they can do enough to lift all the elements which seemed, when they were raised by the communities, not to be directly related to the Act, and therefore to assist and identify that this part is addressed in another, or it needs to be addressed in another legislation. If maybe it's not on this one, it can be addressed in environmental affairs, something like that, but it would assist us to address fully the concerns of the community. Thank you.
No, thank you, Honorable Papa. You will remember, even when we were dealing with the APP, we've raised the issue of uplift department, elevating the issue of coordination and intergovernmental relations as the main program in the, as the other program in the department, just to elevate it. If it's done at the level of administrators, it should go up to level of the DGs and people be accountable for, because, you know, there is no, at least we are members of parliament, sometimes we understand. Can you imagine a community asking a question and a public servant standing up and say, this one does not belong to me, belongs to this department? And people, they know that they've elected government. They don't know that they are electing to Department of Agriculture, Department of Environment. They know that they are electing government which will actually service them. So, and if the intergovernmental relation in this department in particular, because most of the schedule, as Mbumi was talking about, is Schedule 4, that is its concurrent function. And concurrent function means that you cannot do anything without involving those all those partners that they've identified in Schedule 4. So you need to elevate that intergovernmental relation, which actually will then deal with other issues affecting the department, which are of Department of Agriculture. It's something that we have raised, and you are right, Honorable Tepa, we should. They should actually take this in cognizance as they are addressing those issues. Any other issue before we close? Honorable Mwela?
Thank you, Chair. I don't know whether it'll be out of order. It's not related to forestry, Chair, but to the work of the committee. I will seek your guidance. I do not know whether we'll have sufficient time, considering that Thursday is the last day, but one would love to have a meeting where the minister and the teachers will be present and clarify what is going on in the media, because the department is in the media for good reasons, for bad reasons these days. And Chair, we are members of caucuses. When you are asked, what is this, and you are not in any clue, we know that maybe the President might be dealing with the issue, the hawks are investigating, but just to have a clear, if they can put us, we are confident. I don't know, leave it with you, Chair, but it would be nice to get that clarity, because it seems there's a lot that is wrong in the department. It's for interest sake, Chair. Thank you.
Just this, the time we still have enough time, I could have said order member. So, but because we still have time, let me clarify. It's our work to have knowledge of what is happening in the department that we oversight. We've been saying to the department issues that are in public, this committee must be privileged to know those issues. As we have been asked, we can then be able to respond. We've been saying that, and there is nothing wrong for Honorable Mwabi, you can submit it in writing to the chair so that it can be on the program. But what I know is that one of the things that we've agreed, we have dealt in fishery in particular. We said that all the issues that have been raised, the fishery people must attend to them and feedback as they come for quarterly meetings. They must feedback to the committee on what they have done on those issues. But if there are other issues, just submit and then we'll see how we, if there is a need for meeting and engagement, will have, and if there is a clarity that ministers, because there are three ways that honorable members of parliament have. One is on committee engaging with the department as a whole. The other one is individual member has a right to ask the minister question without even waiting for the process of question session in the house. You can write and ask questions to the minister, and the minister will respond. If it doesn't arise in the work of the committee as we do on daily basis. Honorable Kruger.
No, ma'am, it's not about the same point, but it's also about the committee. Remember when all the provinces were here a week or two ago, we sent Mpumalanga back. I just want to know, when will they come and represent the, because I got a few questions for those for that department, so I'm just anxious to know when are they coming back again so that I can give feedback to my constituency. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger. They will have to get the space for them. As we remember, we're supposed to meet with SAVAK. We've not met with it. We'll give them that opportunity if they come. But it doesn't kill any thing for you to write all those issues, and through the minister you get those answers. You don't have to wait for them, because if sometimes you can wait for the meeting, which can take long. You can see our program. By the way, we're oversighting on three sectors which are very big in their nature, and the programs of the committee alone, with the program of this parliament, the way it is not easy for us to deal with everything as we wish. If we had our way, actually we're supposed to have a lot of committee meetings, because that's where you give the department, you make them to account, looking at document asking. But here in parliament, the emphasis is more on the house than the work of the committee are not being prioritized, because to have a meeting, you have to break one small issue into 3 or 4 weeks because of the time that you have as a committee to deal with issues. So I think that's one of the things that we must actually raise for those that will be coming to this parliament, that the work of the committee need to be taken serious by parliament. And the committees need to be resourced and capacitated to do its oversight to go in the public gallery and do all those things that we are doing, which some they don't make impact in the changing life of our people. Instead, it's for us to show ourselves, to showcase ourselves, than actually to deal with issues that our people, the changing life of our people. And thank you very much, honorable members. Tomorrow we have called a meeting, joint meeting, who will be the host, with health and trade industry on the outbreak of listeriosis. Trade and industry chair already has given an apology because already they have convened a meeting with the finance in clashes. So we'll have the health committee as confirmed, because what is important, we want to get briefings by both departments simultaneously as committees, and see whether the management of our trade management, our food safety management, and all the work that government has to do to prevent these challenges that we face in terms of outbreak, are being done. And the coherent message that must go out is very important for our people. Unlike the situation where we have now, the Minister of Health presented, give a picture and interact with communities. Tomorrow, a professor on behalf of the Department of Agriculture, because they are working with the Department of Agriculture, says another thing, which is the problem. But I think the most important thing is to get the coherent message of government and what is the plan to manage the outbreak, because that should be our interest. We cannot continue to lose people if there can be measures to stop that. We must have a plan as government. Thank you very much. As the meeting suggests. Thank you.